CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to the fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today, the Sound Samurai, Kyle Murdoch, better known as K. Murdoch on the internet.
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. Mega Man was like, dude, you know, you're calling yourself the Sound Samurai, but you need to get some samurai gear when you come on stage. And I was like, dude, imagine me walking up, like, to DJ for you wearing, like, a rice hat. I would feel like that would be totally offensive. You know what I mean?
Look,
so I'm still figuring it out. I think I have some
ideas.
Just go
to an anime convention. Say you're cosplaying as the guy from you know.
Ninja Scroll.
There you go. Ninja Scroll. You're done. That's all you have to do.
Ubei Kibagami.
Yeah. Just say that. Yeah, or you know what? If you want to take it from even deeper, weird internet culture, just say that you are this is your Hiro protagonist costume from the cyberpunk novel Snow Crash, because the actual character in that is a half Asian, half black man.
Okay, well, cool. I might be able to pull that off. The half Asian for me would be the apparel.
Right, exactly. Exactly. See, that's why there's ways to spin it that you can do.
No,
this
I agree. I think what Mega Man was on to, and I mean, he's like, dude, look who we perform for. He's like, when I do Splash Woman, I wear arm cannon, and if I have the hat, I'll put on the helmet. I was like, that's true. So he's right.
If all else fails, and they still look at you strange, say, look, I'm a huge fucking, I'm a big fucking Wu-Tang Clan fan. What the fuck's up with you?
Pretty much, yeah. No. I love, you know, that's a whole nother podcast, but it's funny. Like, I consider myself, I try to live like a modern day samurai, like everything from diet to tenets I believe in, and, you know, mindfulness and patience, and you know, except I don't practice using a sword. I practice making beats, I guess. That would be my discipline, you know?
And of course, if you want, Ash in the chat room says, knowing your crowd, Kyle, pretty sure it's not racist. I mean, and even in that regard, there's even one last thing you could do. There's even one more thing you have that right, they don't have on you. And it's right, something that if you do it right and you do it with style, you can be probably the baddest ass motherfucker that ever had a katana, in my opinion. And that's Afro right, Samurai.
That is true. Maybe have a curly Afro.
There's so many ways you could spin this. There's ways you could spin it that I could never spin it, you know.
Right.
There's never a Mexican samurai.
Well, we'll see. But thank you for the dope introduction, man. I'm happy to be back. You know, it's been a while.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while, and since said while has happened, something new has happened. Something new, and I should probably talk at the top of the show for those who don't know what the hell we're talking about. Since the last time we had Kyle on, he is finally released His second edition, is Volume 2, if you will. Actually, it's called Volume 2 of Soundscape Volume 2. For those who don't quite know the history of it, Soundscapes began sort of as this really traditional hip-hop kind of beats that, you know, would later maybe, you know, kind of be the experiment kind of thing. I forgot, what was it released under? For like another label, I know that.
Classic Records, a label based out of the UK that actually deals almost exclusively with instrumental hip-hop. So it kind of fit right in.
Right. And so, you know, that was actually what's funny. That was one of the few times I'd quickly connected with Corey Coleman on you know, you and your music, because he'd brought that up at one point, Soundscape Volume 1. And so Volume 2 is coming out. But I have a question to ask. And this is something I'm curious about, because for the longest time, I had thought Soundscape Volume 2 had came out in April. Or... You already know where I'm going with this, so you explain.
So basically,
why is it in my email? that I got.
And you got a Bandcamp thing like, hey, it's been released, and then you go and it's like, it's not there, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah, why'd you tease me?
What happened was I false alarm, I was messing around with stuff on Bandcamp, and I messed around and I released something that shouldn't have been released. And then actually the reason why that upload didn't even exist anymore is because I accidentally deleted it. So, because Raheem was saying the same thing, Raheem Megaran was saying the same thing, like, dude, like, you released it, but it's not there. And I was like, well, it wasn't meant to come out. It was like, it was supposed to come out on my birthday, April, which it did again.
Right.
But I felt like I kind of, and a lot of people, trust me, you weren't the only one. I had people hit me up like, okay, got an email today, hit the link, and the link is no longer working.
That's what happened to me. What happened to me is like, I got the email. I was like, awesome, I'll buy it when I get paid. And when I got paid, I go, okay, where's that link? Awesome. Where'd it go? And I'm looking around like, did I miss something? And no, did I imagine it?
No, you did not imagine it. And like, truth be told, myself and Rand are in the middle of migrating a lot of stuff, our individual profiles, to this brand new randombeatsmusic.bandcamp site as a label. So in the midst of that, I uploaded the album, and unfortunately, I never read the directions. I just thought I could wing it. And so that's what happened. Like, I put the album up, and I think I even put it to pre-release. And then I was like, oh, no, I didn't want to pre-release it. So I quickly deleted it, but I forgot. And Bandcamp, if someone follows you and you pre-release something, they get an email notifying them. So I was like, oh, no, I basically just, you know, shot myself in the foot with promotion.
You basically said, here's the cake. No, fuck you. It's my cake.
Yeah, so
and then you ate, and you it,
did,
ate it.
It did come out a few weeks later, end of April, and so far the feedback has been great. And I tell people, it's like the reason why I obviously I'm happy about it and happy to still promote it, but that's kind of like the appetizer. That was just to let people know, like, I'm still making music, because that's probably the biggest thing I get people asking me about. What I'm really working on, when I'm in the middle of finally the production on, is Hero Music 2,
yep,
which will be coming out at the end of August, on August 22nd, which this year will be the 21st anniversary of Chrono Trigger, and that is the theme of Hero Music 2. Now, that is the record I really feel like I will not make the mistake of blowing my load, for lack of a better term, too early. You know?
Well, let's actually kind of go back to Volume 2, just because this is something that intrigued me. Because Volume 1, not because I am looking forward to Hero Music 2, do not get me wrong.
Yeah, for sure.
But it does bring up a good point, because Volume 1, as we talked about being instrumental hip-hop, is very much, you know, traditional hip-hop, and very much sort of in that vein where, you know, one could imagine that this could be back in a Panacea song. Whereas Volume 2 is sort of, like, it almost feels like, again, like I think it was like Forever Famicom DLC that had all the instrumental versions of all the video game beats. Like, it feels like it's an extension of that. Is that purposeful because of what's coming up pretty soon, or was that just because Volume 2 felt more that it should reflect that side of you versus the other side that's already been kind of done?
The artwork for each installment of Soundscapes kind of teases you, or not teases you, but indicates what's going. You're going to hear in the actual music on the album. So first one was like, if you remember, it was a soundscape or a landscape of like a mountain with a pool kind of carved out in the shape of a phoenix, because at all the beats that you heard on Soundscapes Volume 1 were actually unreleased instrumentals of Panacea songs. So Volume 2, you know, is like a kind of like Rushmore. It's a mountain with like a video game controller you know, carved out. Shout out to Chris Flacco, who did the artwork. Volume 2, a lot of the beats, or all of them, have like samples from video games. Some of them very obscure, you know, some of them not so obscure. And it's essentially like a compilation, because there are tracks on there from beats I made back in 2008.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. And then there's stuff that it's like I made earlier this year. So,
well, because like I know the history, like, for Mega Ranabolt, just because when that song got released, like, you and I had a conversation on that, and I had a conversation with Raheem, because I literally had the game had come out, I had essentially ripped the music from the game. And the last time, this is how far back it was. Last time you were in Texas, I think it was in San Antonio.
2013, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it came out around that time. So, and he said like, yeah, I'd made that like years ago. We had made that like years ago. And it came out just because of the nature of game development and stuff like that. I mean, you know, so even that being on there was interesting. It was really interesting. I out of all the songs, I think, it is the most you, like, they're all you for you, for, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
But even like I wouldn't have thought of making a beat of the intro clip to, you know, the Capcom. Because it's such a weird thing to think of, like there's a, like, it almost reminded me, and this is where my brain kind of goes to. There's a, I think it's on one of the Bad Dudes albums where it's a hidden track. And you know, this all comes back to Chrono Trigger in a weird way. If you ever played the game Chrono Trigger, this is sort of be a quick thing. There's a point in the game where to get beyond a certain area, you have to hit like a couple chords on a keyboard, and it's like down, down, down. You know.
Yeah.
Right. They had actually made a complete like 2 to 3 minute jazz piece just based on that one chord, based on that, and sort of, you know, bounced it around and did some fun stuff. To me, that opening song, I mean, again, it's a great intro for a thing because the beginning sound effect of that, but it's not that long of a track. You know, it's like this hyper short thing because it's just a Capcom logo kind of thing.
It's an audio signature. Yeah.
What inspired you to do that? just to kick it off, right? Because again, there's so many. There's. It's not like this is all Capcom stuff. You know, that goes from Capcom to everything.
When I was sequencing the album and coming up with the order of the tracks, because I knew what tracks actually did. I can make a volume 3 with more video game stuff if I wanted, but I figured those tracks were like the ones I really wanted to put on this one, this particular volume. And so when I made volume 2 and I was making the sequence, I said, well, hey, the Capcom music, when you play Capcom games, much like if you get a Konami game or a Data East or whatever, that's like the audio logo and like the signature tune, similar to when you boot up a Mac, you hear the ha, whatever. So I was like, why not put that? It's starting off the album. And actually, that particular track was actually made in 2010. Raheem, Mega Ran, and it's funny, most of those tracks on there have some kind of, I work with him or either on a vocal version or because of him, like, came to fruition. So that particular track, we were commissioned by Capcom. He was good friends with someone at Capcom, of course, Capcom Unity, and they wanted to do, they wanted someone to do like a rap intro for their podcast. And that was the music we used. And so I don't even know if that podcast still comes on. It like went on hiatus and it came back a couple years ago. And I need to subscribe to that through Stitcher or something. But that I decided, I was like, a lot of people probably will never hear this. Unless you listen to the podcast, and even if you do listen to it, you probably don't have access to a high quality, longer, fleshed out instrumental version, because the version that you hear that opens the podcast actually has Ran on it, rapping, talking about various Capcom games. So there we go. And I just called it Capcom. And if you've seen me with Raheem or Mega Ran over the last 5 years, you've probably heard that beat being played numerous times whenever he does his, his freestyle. So.
Right. Well, what's interesting, speaking of Raheem, and this has come up in the comments in general, when, you know, because again, you share on Facebook. It's interesting you bring up that a lot of those beats either have, you know, kind of came about work like that, and we've mentioned certain ones like Mega Randabolt being one that came out. Obviously, the Wreck-It Ran instrumental is there. There's one, and even Stone Man, but there's one beat on there that I had to double check and make sure that there wasn't a song yet. Because
which one?
If you don't know what song I'm talking about, because it's funny when we talk about things. I'm getting there, because it's funny we talk about songs and stuff like that. Like one of the weird moments for me that always came about, like my introduction to you, and was never paying out, it wasn't Panacea, you know, as much as I'd loved it then. It was, for me, it was Forever Famicom.
Right, like many people.
Right, yeah. You know, but like a lot of nerdcore people myself. And so the song that obviously, you know, there are a lot of key songs on that album for sure, but there's one song, you know, that no matter what show I go to Mega Ran for, that I can always expect is going to be played, just because of the nature of the song. It's got a great hook. It's got a what? It's Little Nemo. It's Dream Master, essentially.
Yeah, right. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
And so, you know, lo and behold, I know that song well. I know how it begins. I know the beat, everything else in between.
Right.
Yeah. And so, lo and behold, as I download for Famicom, you know, the album comes out, and I'm like, yay, hooray. It's essentially, you have on there essentially Nemo's Nightmare, the flip side.
Right.
Here's a question I'm going to ask you. I already have a feeling that's going to become a beat for a future Mega Ran song. I actually don't know if it is. I just have a feeling because it's such a weird...
Oh, it actually is. And I'll send it
to you. Of course it is. It's the inverse. Like, what brought you to do the... I guess it's a good question, especially, you know, we are, you know, years out of for Famicom, and you guys have done Volume
3.
Yeah,
6 years now. Yikes!
Yeah, and you essentially put, you know... Not saying you put the bet on making video game music, obviously, like this, but you've, for the time being, you know, Forever Famicom is going to, you know, is going to sleep and, you know, and rest, you know, rest until the need to pull out the Master Sword and defeat Ganon comes forth again.
Right. That's a good analogy.
Came out of nowhere. But that being said, what compelled you to do the flip side of Dream Master?
There's a actually he's a Patreon like yourself. There's a patron in St. Louis named Chris Hall, and he actually hit me up one day and he was like, "Dude, I love this particular sample, like the ending of the final boss stage music on Little Nemo the Dream Master," and he was like, "I would love to hear you flip it." So before we started actually doing what we do on Patreon. I would ask people like, "What game do you want to hear me flip?" And he sent me that, and I was like, "Okay." So I thought it was only cool to put the beginning, but just if you listen to it, it's kind of warped and phased, almost So that was the reason why I did it. Like, I just liked the challenge, and it actually turned out to be a cool song.
Well, because it's so cool. Because again, it's such a weird happenstance. Because you're absolutely right. Like when I heard it. And I heard like the warbled kind of version of the intro to the dream.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, with the yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that Ash is asking in the chat room what flipped it means. Let me explain really quick as best as I can in non-hip-hop initiated. Whenever you flip something in hip-hop, essentially it's the idea you take this root song. Let's say, for example, Kokomo by Beach Boys. Because
right.
Why not? Because that's what came to mind first was Beach Boys' Kokomo. That tells you how lame my head works. The idea of flipping something is taking that and making it into a beat. Now, that can be something as complex as, let's say, you know, California Love being a flip version of Woman to Woman by, that song, I forgot. Joy Cocker. Oh, I forgot. That's okay. Woman to Woman. Or it could be something as
Joey Cocker?
Yeah, something like that. It's okay. I'll look it up later. Doing something as complex as that, because you hear that beat, like that's how I knew about
Crocker.
Right, thank you.
You
know, because when I heard that song the first time go around, I'm like, that's Woman, and I didn't, you know, like someone's like, California Love. I'm like, I recognize that beat. Or it could be something as simple as what we heard, even the opening thing to Capcom, taking this little chunk of a data, sampling it, and sort of making a beat built around that.
That's pretty much it. I mean, basically, when I say flip it, I just mean I sample it and I just put, like, you know, I just rearrange it a lot of times. That's pretty much actually, it's good that you brought that up, because one of the misnomers when people hear my stuff and that sometimes they misconstrue a lot of what I do is when they try to group me into, like, the same batch of people who do, like, the OC Remix guys. I love those guys. Much respect. But what I do, like, for instance, with Hero Music 2 and Hero Music 1 and soon to be Hero Music 2, and when you hear a lot of my stuff, I just use the hip-hop that I basically, the techniques that I used when I grew up off of sampling stuff, as opposed to jazz and soul records, I sample video games and anime, and I flip it, or sample it, and just, you know, put hip-hop drums, and I might take a certain section that was never, like, focused on and make that the melody line, and then put other textures around it. That's kind of what I do. It's not really rocket science, but, you know, people seem to dig it.
Well, because, you know, it's, and you know, we take OC Remix.
It takes skill. You know, it definitely takes skill.
Right. Well, cause that's sort of thing. Like OC Remix and that kind of culture is it. The best way I've ever really explained what OC Remix is, and it's Overclock Remix is one of the worst named things in the history of things, because when you think of remix, you don't think of what OC Remix is. Because OC Remix is the farthest thing in my mind from remix. It's actually it's closer to a cover and even closer to an interpretation differently. Because there are pieces on OC Remix. Like I'll put it this way, like OC Remix is at a level now where when they wanted to remake Super Street Fighter 2, you know, HD Crazy Remix, whatever the hell, they asked those guys, they asked the people who had made a fan album from OC Remix if they could use that, and they made their own, you know, that like that's the level that those guys, like the guys who have come up through OC Remix, you know, I'll name some names that a lot of the audience will know, people like Jake Kaufman, better known as Bert, who has done a lot of video game soundtracks. Right. Big Giant Circles came up through that. Also a very big artist. I forget the guy's name.
Danny B.
Yep, Danny B. Of course, Danny Baranowski. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, a lot of people who are now big, you know, at least big, you know, people.
Game composers, right.
Right. Came up through that because they just, you know, did that. Whereas on the hip-hop side, it's again, no less skill involved. They're both, you know, this is to say that. It's more of a you take this root seed of a sample, that being either from video game or from a beat or whatever, and then you kind of build around that and sort of make your own sort of you know, crazy dodecahedron of doom or something.
and you know, it's funny, you know, well, I mean, why not talk about this? I love like giving you like the inside stuff. So basically the plan is some things are gonna happen next year that are gonna allow me to do music a little bit more full time. And part of that is actually regarding the Patreon. And actually part of that is myself and Rana are working on it now, rebranding up the Patreon and expanding and making maybe a separate Patreon just for me as K Murdoch and all the audio things I like to do. And then one for Megaran. It's just an idea. This hasn't happened yet, but.
Well, because there's one thing out of all the stuff that you've done that I wish would come back. It hasn't come back in a while, but I personally wish it would come back, was the Miscellanies. I enjoyed that a ton as a guy that, I almost feel sometimes.
It's some nerdy, cool music, like history stuff, you know?
Well, it's because like, for me, I feel at times that my musical tastes, like I'm not because I'm not being introduced, like I'm because of the way I listen to music, I'm and the way a lot of people now listen to music. If we think about, you know, the days of yore, and I put that in big quotation marks, a lot of us got music from the radio and stuff like that. But even with me, a lot of my musical things that I remember in my youth and stuff like that really came from video games. You know, like I got into, you know, if I really think of one of the main reasons I got into punk is because of Tony Hawk Pro Skater. You know, that was a really root reason of why I got into Millennium.
They were the gateway drug.
Right, exactly. And then kind of, you know, set me off in my weird punk adventure. And the reason I got into electronica was because also other things like that. And if I think about hip hop's the only one that like sort of came about randomly. But if I put all that, like a lot of the things that would get me music would be someone would say, "Hey, check this out. Hey, listen to this." And it wouldn't be the radio, because radio would always play the same kind of stuff. I was like, "Well, I'm not really into this pop music, and that's cool that you are." It'd always be a friend. It's like, "Dude, have you heard of New Order?" Like, "What's New Order?" It's like, "Dude, have you checked out the new techno album?" Or like, "Dude, check out the soundtrack for Trainspotting." It's like, "What the fuck is this shit? This is amazing." You know, here's the Prodigy, the real thing. And, you know, so for me, a lot of that came through friends of mine recommending music, either handing me stuff, whatever. And I always felt like the Miscellany was like, here is someone that knows hip hop that I trust, that knows hip hop that I know knows, for the most part, what my tastes are in a good gen, or at least has the mindset to know what makes this. And I was like, that was like my kind of introduction more to, you know, deeper hip hop. Because like for me, a lot of that, I tend to lose that, because a lot of my friends aren't really into it. And so I was like, man, I really missed this whole album, because it's something.
Man, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I there was a lot involved in making that show, but it was a labor of love, and it's something that I plan on next year going back to and doing like at least monthly installments of that. My other show I call Super Nighttime Music, which is just instrumental hip hop for people who like my stuff, you know, or beyond, just like just exposing people to some other cool people who make dope beats and arrangements. You know, our Bits, Rhymes, and Life podcast, that just takes a lot to image and do the sound design. Like, basically, my goal is by next summer to be full-time sound samurai. Like, so that means making music, helping, like, engineer and put out albums for Rand and other people through Random Beats, and then doing those kind of things, like, on a consistent basis. Because right now, because of my other responsibilities, obviously, I'm going to be a husband and father. That's never going away. But right. my 9-to-5 job, I'm trying to segue out of that. But I need to, in order to do that, make sure that financially, you know, I can be okay. And
this
actually,
this is like part two. What's funny is I almost feel like we've heard this. We've heard it before. Like, I'm kidding with you, Carson.
No, well, actually, about a year and a half ago, me and Raheem, the plan was for actually me to move to Phoenix and us to do this full time. Then I got offered the job I have now to teach, and it was just a good opportunity.
Oh yeah, yeah, and you had, again at the time you had a kid coming along the way, I don't know if you had the kid, but you had everything in work.
My daughter was born like right around that, like
right
yeah.
around that. I know it was around that time,
2014, right?
Yeah,
my first daughter. I have another one on the way now, actually due in September. So well,
congratulations!
That's amazing.
I mean, that's amazing. It's but the point is that you've had you had a lot of things happen, and this just sort of happened, saying, hey, how would you like to make things a heck of a whole lot easier for you know your family right now at this point in time?
It's right, like, and that's what it was, man. It was just like kind of sitting on the sideline, and it's frustrating. Like when I see Raheem out on tour, because I'm like, dang, like I should be with him, but at the same time, I'm very like I need to be here and I want to be here. So the happy medium is like if I can do this full time, like turn what has always been like a pretty cool like side thing into my full time thing. And trust me, I have enough ideas and enough sound things that I want to do that it can be. And actually part of that is that in 2017, I will be moving to Phoenix, Arizona.
Wow. So you're actually, you're going to go
be together. And like, for instance, like, we have ideas to do Let's Plays and bring back our radio show, The Manual, and actually to do like you're doing now with Cosmic TV and to stream it live. And maybe we'll even talk to you about maybe even bringing what we do onto a platform like this.
Maybe. So, maybe we can have conversations, you know, when that time comes. Because, again, you had been talking about this for a while, even when we had, you know, met, you know, and it was, you know, during the right before the birth of the Patreon, you know, and we've talked about this on the air,
right.
and all this is kind of a little bit public, but it was after it was you
after I met I hung out with you and Corey, and everyone was really you know just planting the seed in our head, and I don't know, about a year later, not even a year, maybe 6 months later, we launched our Patreon like the end of 2014. So yeah, because it's been almost 18 months now, so it's
yeah,
because
it's been a while, and you had been talking about that idea for a long, long time, trying to get back to it, and you know, to people like Corey who was a huge fan of yours, you know, well before I was a huge fan of yours, and Ash in the chat room saying that's almost Texas #, hire me, and so maybe you'll have our employer ready. But even going back to that, because thinking of all that stuff, like you'd been talking about it for a while, and even to Corey, someone who had known you from the early days, was perplexed that you were not already doing this. Just because
it's funny how it works. It's kind of hit me like an epiphany, like not too long ago. It's like, dude, I do enough stuff, and I feel like I have enough people who like and would support my stuff, so it's time to just do it and do it full time. Like, even as a hobby, I was making sure that the stuff I was putting out was still professionally, like, you know, and that just came from the fact that I have experience like in radio and music, like all these different forms. So it's like funny that I call myself the quote unquote sound samurai, but in a lot of ways, like I am, because I've traveled to so many realms within Sonics, and I've been able to do all of them pretty well. So now it's just, and you know, from talking to Raheem or Megaran, just trying to brand K Murdoch and this sound samurai thing and really just do it like full time, the same way that he's out on the road performing and pushing his Mega Ran brand. And in the midst of that, us combining and trying to launch this Random Beats label where we can put out our own stuff, but also, you know, like cool projects like the WooCraft album and Sky Blue and all these other people. So,
which is, I think is probably the more, you know, thing, because I think that's the component both you and him, I'm not saying that, like, he was already kind of beginning it, but I think that's the component that you were missing. Because, you know, we talked about Volume 1, you know, that came out on a different label, technically. I mean, technically, it was still a Neosonic production and had all the things that needed
it. But it was a lot of my stuff. It's been all over the place. And now it's, like, really trying to have one consolidated home. And that's kind of where Random Beats comes into play, like, as a label. And something that both Raheem and I have really, like, can put into. But in the meantime, he's always like, yo, you know, you should be doing this as K Murdoch and the Sound Samurai and the same way that I do Megaman. But the thing is with me, I'm the other guy usually. The producer isn't usually the guy out in front of most people.
I don't know, man. So, I think Dr. Dre would completely and utterly disagree with you on that one. But then again, he's looking for Apple.
Some people. But I'm not like that.
I think Jay-Z would also totally and utterly disagree with you, too.
Honestly, all I want to do is be able to support my family and use my skills, as cliche as it is, I say it all the time, use my skills to help pay the bills and be, you know, continue to travel and let the music take me to places that I only fathom, you know, or dreamed about.
Well, because now because right now music is in such a weird thing, and this kind of brings into something that's finally going to, you know, come out, but if we talk about last year, was it earlier this year? It might have been earlier this year or last year. It's been such a long time that I thought about when this came out officially. But like we're right now finally the cusp of Mighty No. 9 coming out.
And, finally, right?
I mean, again, game development takes a lot of time. You know, music development takes a lot of time. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, I know of a personal person who accidentally released an album when it wasn't supposed to be released. And I'm staring at him right now. Before you start casting stones at concept people, understand.
It's a lot of stuff that happens. People forget that these people are, you know, and I'm speaking of myself too. We're still have a life outside of what we do, and sometimes life gets in the way.
Yeah, they just announced a delay for No Man's Sky, and apparently the developer got death threats for delaying the game.
What? See, that's ridiculous, man. Yeah. Come on.
So, you know, we're at that world, but, you know, so, but that being said, that wasn't really my point. I mean, that was just kind of came up, but, thinking about that, you know, music's at a point now where we have, artists who, you know, if you think about like how artists make money, it's becoming less and less about actually selling albums. I'm saying that's a bad thing. It's just sort of the way the world is in this world of streaming, this world of instant access, you know, that's sort of where the market's going.
Right.
So then, you know, you either have a choice of like either complaining and being sad about it, or B, kind of figuring out a different way of making money and sort of that. And you start to see that now, especially you guys who are like licensing beats to video games, to like, you know, getting your stuff that again, like when
being commissioned by these companies to make music, you know?
Exactly.
And that's kind of something I really want to do, like, actually on my bucket list. You know, I have things like winning Grammy, but I also have a score video game, you know? And it doesn't have to be, like, a known developer. Like, if someone wants to give me the ability to for indie game, like, I think I would enjoy that just as much, like, helping... Similar to how Danny B helped and is synonymous now with Super Meat Boy and, you know, all these other, you know, Dance of the Necro Dancer game and all that stuff, you know, Binding of Isaac and all that stuff. So
that was half the fun of Crypt was having Danny B do a soundtrack for that. Just because, again, right. I love the game idea and him doing it was like, oh, I'm even more in. And I think that's what's stuff happening is having all that kind of go, because I think that's, to me, if I really think about, you know, we're talking about earlier about how everyone gets music and stuff like that. But really think about why it is chiptunes is kind of my love and stuff like that. You can argue, oh, it's a little bit of nostalgia, video games, stuff like that.
Right.
I agree it right. is. But like, I was the kid that played enough video games that while I'm walking around the world, you know, a video game music will pop in my head. Much like you're walking around and a song pops in your head, you start, you know, humming a ditty or whatever. Like my ditties would be video game music. And so if I think about that being my, you know, me personally, my introduction to a lot of different music, a lot of different sounds, a lot of different artists, I think that's what's becoming even for it, even becoming more so for this next generation as games become their things. I mean, I can imagine that your daughter, you know, stares at your iPad and just sort of, you know, instinctively touches things and everything else already.
Yeah, she does. She's it's amazing how receptive she is. Like, you know, just even she has a Leap Pad or whatever. And I mean, even just seeing how she'll take my wife's or my iPhone, and she knows to hit the home button. I mean, obviously, it's fingerprint and you know, enabled. Thank God, because she'll go through like the photo, but she even intuitively she'll know to swipe to go through the photos, and she's only 1.5. Like. Just about. So it's amazing. But you know, this is all she'll know. Like we always joke about it. Like when she's my age, how will cell phones be? I think it'll be a situation where someone will call and they'll touch their pinky and
who knows? You know, I mean, and that's, you know, and then, you know, cause again, like the things that excite me now is that a lot of stuff that we're having is Gen 1. Like we're like,
right.
You know, like if I haven't really used the Vive yet. I've used some VR stuff,
right.
But to know that's Gen 1, like this is like the primitive version. This is the one that when your kid grows up, she'll say, "Dad, I can't believe you use this old piece of shit." You know, maybe not
pretty
those words, but you know, in that kind of thing as she's going into her holodeck, you know, composing weird synth tunes, you know, out of whatever the hell, you know, who knows what she'll be doing. And that excites me. That's what excites me is the idea that we're at the cusp of these things. You know,
I just want to live long enough to see it, you know? And I mean, God willing, we should, I mean, actually our generation should be the first real like centurions. Like there's enough technology. We know enough about like health, and how to take care of ourselves. We're easily, you know, not easily, but we should all be living into our early, you know, our hundreds. So they say.
We shall see.
If we go the Ray Kurzweil, you know, path, and that's what he says, at least. So
I mean, worst case, again, even with that being said, and you know, but it's the idea of, again, because you bring up, you know, I always think about like my life growing up, and since we kind of grew up the same generation and that kind of thing, you know. Neither of us know, like, we know of a world where the internet wasn't as it is now. We know of a world where cell phones aren't as technologically advanced as they are now.
Right.
You and I don't know a world where video games don't exist. You know, we
don't. Yeah, no, we don't.
We don't. You know,
no, like we don't.
It's always been that background thing. You know, like there's always been an arcade. There's always been video games.
Right.
As long as I've been aware, there's always been Nintendo, but even then, before that, there's always been Atari. There's always some form of of bits, pixels on screen that had this weird, you know, as I learned, square waves and stuff like that that made sounds.
Right,
and always been,
right.
You know, like the background of, you know, the background of my life is Mario, is the Mario theme, is Zelda theme.
And how amazing is it that 40 some years later, that there's still this nostalgic or, you know, love, lore and fascination with, you know, being like the retro stuff, like, you know, Mario and Zelda, like these characters are like, have grown up with us. You know, this Nintendo will never stop making Mario and Zelda. I feel like that's their trump card. Like, okay, nothing else is working. It's time for another Mario. It's time for another Zelda. It's time for another, you know, Smash Brothers. Like,
or something. Yeah.
They're good. So.
Yeah, no, and that's why. And it's interesting thinking that because, I mean, yes, one could argue that, and this is not to diminish it, one could argue that, like, something like Soundscape Volume 2. Is like, it's cashing in on this. It's just taking advantage of
no,
all
yeah, this. Some people probably like, this dude's pandering, but if they've seen the other stuff I've done, it's not like this is my first, like, foray into, like, the nerdcore stuff. I've been doing this stuff for, I mean, like I said, some of these beats were made even before Forever Famicom, so.
Oh, wow.
I just always kind of had a fascination. That just came from the fact that I was, when I started making hip-hop, I didn't want to just do what everyone else was doing. I didn't want to flip the same soul and jazz sample. So I went to prog rock.
You didn't want to sample the same fucking beat from the Funky Worm that everyone from my Ohio players that everyone sampled.
Yeah, or James Brown, the funky drummer, or you know, certain breaks that everyone knows in hip hop. Like if you hear me use them, you might not have heard it. Like for instance, "Thank You for Listening" has like a pretty known break in hip hop that one of my favorite groups, the Tribe Called Quest, used, but you never heard it used with over the Mario 3 Kings theme. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it was like, I feel like trying to bridge that world. That's what I feel like Forever Famicom inadvertently did, was kind of bridge like hip hop and video game. We tried,
which I think that's a good thing. I know we're almost out of time because I know you had a hard out that you had to do some stuff with and kind of take care of. But I think that's why it is, you know, that I'm glad that Volume 2 is kind of this way, because through kind of nerdcore, it's what really revitalized my love of hip hop and kind of pointed me in the direction that, because I've always liked hip hop and I've always liked certain things of hip hop,
right.
But I never quite knew where to go and explore, because that's kind of the hard part, is when you're kind of a nerdy, weird Mexican kid and you go to a hip hop show and you feel completely out of place and you're like, not because I don't belong here. I'm into your music. I love it. It's great beats, but I don't have any connection to this. This is not my thing. Right. Whereas you hear nerdcore, and as strange as it sounds, you know, even if I have no correlation to any of the life experience that Ramin has, or any nerdcore artist, mind you, has sometimes, hearing that kind of stuff and hearing them talk about like weird dorky things that I catch the references of is that
you're like, I know about that.
Right. Like I know about that. I understand that. Or I can see a parallel, or I can hear something. And then you start hearing, you know, different lyrics and stuff like that. And sure, you know, I think Raheem has said the idea that the video game is sort of, the video game beats the candy, but I mean, you know, the sort of the thing to lure them in, the hook, if
right,
you will.
Right. That's a good way to describe it, man. That's how I feel too. Like if through listening through Forever Famicom or what, anything that I myself or Mega Ran or whatever have done has got you more into groups like De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest, subsequently, then I've done my job, because those are the guys. There would be no Panacea or no K Murdoch, no Mangarin without those groups preceding us. And all we did was take the, you know, the hip hop, because we're hip hop kids, and applied it to one of our other passions, which was video games. And, you know, like Raheem says at the end of Dream Master, you know, the rest hasn't been written yet. Like, we'll see how it turns out, but so far, so good. You know,
I mean, it's like you know, and this is the last thought. I'll leave it because, like I said, we're almost out of time. it's kind of like Wu-Tang Clan. If you think of Wu-Tang Clan as hip hop,
sure.
You know, they're rapping about like 70s and 60s, like, you know, samurai films and like, you know, Japanese weird Chinese movies. And
it's
stuff
nerdy
like
stuff. Like,
right.
It's
very nerdy, you know, stuff.
Yeah, but there's some, you know, dudes from the like real streets, like rapping about nerdy stuff. So it's kind of like this ill dichotomy that, but it also, if you go to one of their shows, to see you know, the spread of people there, like the hardcore street people, and then you see a bunch of like kids from the burbs who know those Run Run Shaw movies. You know what I mean? Like it's amazing. And they've been around for what, 25 years, just about, and like they could still easily sell out an arena. You know?
Yeah.
So it's amazing.
Totally. Well, Kyle, always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh man, always a pleasure to come.
So because we know something's coming up in August, where can people find Volume 2 if they haven't gotten a copy of it?
Go to randombeatsmusic.bandcamp.com. We're trying to have we bought randombeats.net and we're gonna have that reroute, so the labels landing page will be the Bandcamp, because we're a record label, so obviously we want people to go where they can get the music. But that's where you can find my music. You can find all of Mega Ran stuff. You'll there's some new Panacea in the works, hopefully for 2017. So, like I said, it's 2017. I'm looking to be a big year. Kind of like I'm coming back.
Whenever that's dropping, I have, as much as I'd love to chat about it, we'll chat about when that happens.
Oh, Corey,
I want you to give Corey first.
Oh, yeah, I will. Corey was actually saying that he wanted to try to get us to come out and perform at some party, but actually, I need to get in contact with him because
I think I know what party it is, and I think you should perform at said party. I think.
I would love to. And I was like, well, you know, we're not really working as Panacea, but we kind of have slowly gotten back into.
I think you should. Look, if any, and this is again. I love you, Kyle. I would love to have first dibs on that kind of stuff. But I know that would mean way more to Corey than it would mean to me. Not because it doesn't mean anything to me, but it'd mean way more to him than it would be to me. And I think out of all the crew, like Panacea and what you did with, like, had I known Corey had known about you as long as I've known about you, I would have said, man, you should really fucking book Megaran, because he works with Kay Murdoch. And it's like, Kay? Like, right. Yes. Just because if you had been, because he'd always wanted hip hop at his stuff and all his parties. And like, man,
right.
If you had just grabbed some fucking nerdcore shit, everyone here would like it and you'd be happy right. too. And we'd all be right. happy. And if that's what it takes, if all it takes is the idea of you and fucking and Panacea and I'm sorry, I forget the other guy's name, and I apologize.
Raw Poetic.
I was like, it was on the tip of my tongue. Raw Poetic, just doing whatever. If that's the gateway drug to have that happen, then so fucking be it. Because like you of all people should have been there for a lot of the stuff. Just knowing again, if I knew then what I know now, and I could go back in time and tell myself. One point in time, Corey's going to mention Panacea. It's going to sound weird, but the guy who made it is Kyle Murdoch. Yes, Forever Famicom, Kyle Murdoch. Drop that to him now, so that way you can say, "Oh yeah, I might be able to get a hold of Kay one day,
right?
You know, or that kind of stuff. You know, just because again, that you of all people, if it's the party, I think it is, and it happens to be happening in August, I think you should go if you can go.
All right. Well, I need to get it. I haven't talked to Corey since maybe the top of the year, so I need to touch base with him. If you talk to him, just tell him to get. Let's get in contact.
I'll text him tonight before that is. Okay.
Yeah. Tell him we're working on some new music, and I will be happy to come on and get interviewed and all that.
I think of all people, you should be going, especially with the explosion that is as of late for all the Double Toasted stuff.
Right.
You know, we'll leave it at that.
Okay.
But now that we're still at the end of the show, of course, obviously we still don't know, you know, we know what to play following too, but obviously something's on the horizon. Where can people be, you know, who want to be in the know for the future Chrono Trigger stuff? How can they follow you?
Kyle? So I would say the best place, oh man. Okay. the-sound-samurai.com. I actually am right now, it reroutes to my Facebook page that I'm trying to be more diligent about upgrading more regularly, especially with like announcements like that. But that will be, I'm having someone actually like make a new website where I'll have like a blog on the website that has like everything I'm doing. Like if I, you know, worked on a particular album for somebody else, if I, working on something, and I'm actually trying to do more stuff where you can see me working on stuff in the studio, like more of what I call my production, like on it, you know, stuff in the works and making myself more available. Like I still haven't really gotten down on Snapchat or anything, but because I'm trying to find like a good use for it. But I'm thinking, like, you know, I just want to be more out there. You know,
you and me both
real
on Snapchat.
Big about that stuff. You know, and I've seen it happen, and it works for him. But he also does this full time. I'm not at that point, but I'm aiming to get to that point by next year. So you heard it first.
So yeah, you go to the website the-sound-samurai, which is one of the most biggest mouthful sites. But the easiest way, but of course, the easier way, if you guys want to follow Kyle, just head over.
At Neosonics.
Yeah.
NEOSONIX, and that's just my code for new sounds, Neosonics. So,
one of the best Twitter handles out there. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 on the Twitter. If you want to check out previous episodes of our podcast, including episodes where we've had Kyle on in the past, head to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. You'll find links to show notes, our Twitter account, which is at 8BitLife Podcast, and of course, other shows in the network, like the gaming show I do called Jump Point. And of course, after you've bought all the music, that is Kyle's, and because the way Bandcamp works, you can actually, you know, sign up for a year and sort of get music for a yearly cost now. And,
right.
And, you know, and
which is awesome.
Yep, totally. After you've done that and you've had like, I got $5 left over, head over to patreon.com /8bitlife and help this show become bigger, better, and more awesomer.
Man, because it's guys like you who just allow me, guys like me, to do what I do. And like, I appreciate it. I really do. So thank you, man. We'll have to try to, you know, I try to come on maybe in the fall, because by then Hero Music 2 should be out. And, you know, some other, maybe I'll have some new music and some new announcements. And then even better, maybe I'll potentially see you, if you know what I mean, in the fall as well.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe if things all work out weirdly, we will record a live show somewhere special. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, I don't want to say anything else, you know, but yeah.
Life never, you never know where life takes you. You never know where things are going to go. But who knows? Maybe if everything aligns and the universe collide, you know, everything kind of lines up. Who knows? Maybe we'll record somewhere live in a very, very cool, unique way. Can't say anywhere, because who knows? That's life. Life is strange. Anyways, people, so that's it for today. See you next time. We talk to another geek lesson completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
See ya.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.